This podcast is brought to you by Australia's LGBTQIA+ community media organisation, Joy. Keep Joy on air by becoming a member, a subscriber, or donate. Head to joy.org.au. Joy, a diverse sound for a diverse community.
Hi, I'm Brett.
Hi, I'm Brett.
And you've been listening to another podcast of The Affair on Joy 94.9.
joy.org.au/The Affair.
Joy 94.9 in Melbourne, joy.org.au for the world.
Tonight on The Affair, Brett and the other Brett are revisiting disco, its origins, trivia, and its importance to the GLBTI community, as well as other minority groups.
So in keeping in that style, our opening theme tonight is lifted from the legendary disco music show Soul Train, because tonight it's a very disco affair.
Love Soul Train, Brady.
Do you know, can I just say, Brady was already doing disco moves in his chair. I think there's going to be a lot of that tonight.
Oh my goodness. I just want to say a big thanks to Jim for the news and Shannon for the Chappelle Show. But obviously tonight, it's all about the disco, isn't it? My goodness. It's one of those things where how can we do a show without talking about such a fantastic genre of music?
Its influences run deep. And for many of us, it still lives on in our hearts and never died.
Absolutely. And I want to have two special dedications for tonight. First off, I want to welcome all the listeners of the Disco Appreciation Society on Facebook. And hopefully they'll guess some of the tunes. But a big shout out to my mate Eddie in London. And I want to dedicate tonight's show to the protesters of what is going on in Russia about GLBTI rights, or the lack of them. The protest that we mentioned 2 weeks ago has actually been moved now because, Brett, there's more than 3,000 people actually going to be attending.
There's a lot of angry people.
A lot of angry Londoners.
And I'm sure there's more, so they've still got time to get involved.
Absolutely. And the protest is today, the 10th of August. It'll be 1 p.m. Greenwich Mean Time.
Which is London time. Are a little bit confused.
But it has moved. They're now not going to the Russian embassy. They're actually going to Richmond Terrace, Whitehall. So the closest tube station is Westminster or Embankment. It is a public event on Facebook and all are welcome to attend. So I want to say a big shout out to all the fantastic protesters. This disco affair is all for you this evening.
So spend the next hour getting ready for the protest, listening to us, and then you head off and you've still got a couple of hours to get there.
Absolutely. So now, Brady, obviously it's disco.
It is. So we should ask the listeners to let us know what their favourite disco song is. You will be hearing some of ours tonight.
Absolutely.
Let us know what your favourite one is, and with any luck, we won't be taking requests, but with any luck it coincides with one of ours.
Maybe it'll just be coincidental. Okay. So, Eddie, darling in London, this is for you. You and I danced to this in your living room many years ago. It is the Ritchie Family. It's got to be Give Me a Break. From the film You Can't Stop the Music, Brady.
Did make an appearance in that, yes. But from their album Give Me a Break from the year prior. I'll tell you a little bit more about the Ritchie Family after this.
Roll up the rug. You're on The Affair on Joy 94.9.
Joy 94.9.
On Joy 94.9, it's 2013, not 1975. You're a little bit confused after hearing that. Was, of course, Van McCoy and the Soul City Symphony with The Hustle, number one on the Billboard charts in 1975.
Oh, how fantastic.
And Grammy Award for Best Pop Instrumental Performance. That's a quite narrow category, isn't it?
Do you know something that I've found is that there are so many fantastic instrumental disco songs.
What's your definition of instrumental, though? Because I was just listening to that song, and there's definitely people saying, do it.
That's
do the
true.
Hustle.
But as I played the Soul Train theme, mm-hmm. and they actually had a few vocals, which were actually the Three Degrees. And is that fine line between, well, there's not actually choruses, there's just a couple of words sung. So
yeah.
Does it blur the lines a bit? But obviously tonight, it's all about disco on the
air. It
is. Looking at all the wonderful songs tonight,
yep.
I actually wanted to go back to say, what is the origin? Like when can you actually pinpoint a time when disco actually started?
Yeah, we've actually done things a little bit backwards because we played the Ritchie Family earlier, which was kind of from the end of the disco
Absolutely.
Era. But The Hustle, which we just heard, was quite early. It was 75. Mm. And it was really kind of 74, 75 when things started to chart. But there's a lot of debate as to where the first song comes, because the first disco song came a long time before the first charting disco
Absolutely.
Song. I'm a bit of a disco nerd, and I've read a few books on this topic, and most of them basically say that disco was over pretty much by the time Mr. and Mrs. Joe Public knew about it.
Yeah.
So it actually started way back, kind of swinging in from the end of the kind of funk and soul of the late 60s. But the question is where that line falls when it went from being funky
yeah.
to being a disco song.
Well, it's funny you should say that, because when on our last show on the cover show, I played Keep Me Hanging On by The Supremes, which is a Motown track, but how the guitar was played, it has been referenced, was that the start of disco? Because the actual rest of the song is actually a pretty, it's a Motown sound.
Yeah, yeah. And I mean, Motown did go heavy into disco later on. And I guess it was just a progression, like a lot of things. There's yeah. no kind of line where someone went, I'm going to invent a new genre of music. But there is obviously a genre which we
Absolutely.
Know is disco. So there is always a debate over which one was the first one.
Absolutely. Now, look, I've found a couple of tracks that I want to play for you, and I want to get your insight. Now, the first one that I found, this is claimed to be the very first. So I'm just going to be playing probably about the first 30 seconds of the song. And this track, it's by Manu Dibango
mm-hmm.
back in 1972, and it's called Sol Makossa or Sol Makossa. Like, for me, this is funk.
Yeah, see, I don't say this is disco because it doesn't have four on the floor.
Exactly.
It's got three on the floor. I'm counting. See, it's missing that third
it is.
Beat.
It's missing the third beat.
Yeah, but it does have the Waka Waka guitar, which was quite a kind of a hallmark of the disco.
Absolutely. But look, I heard it and I just went, that's funk.
Yeah.
That's pure funk for me. So that was he was a saxophonist and a songwriter from the Cameroon. Now, since the original release had become so obscure, I didn't even actually know this song existed until basically today. About 23 different artists had actually covered this song, and the single actually only peaked in the US Billboard charts for number 35.
See, this is the thing. As I said, the disco charting is a completely different discussion as to the first disco song. But so
absolutely.
We've got another nominee for first disco song.
Now, I love this.
Ooh, wee baby. Ooh, ooh. Listen, lady. Hey, I'm wine and dine. Take you anywhere you want to go. Oh, but when the night is over, you just may not see me no more. All I want is a one-night
stand. See, that's starting to sound disco.
Yeah, and there are definitely four on the floor there. Anyway, this is Jerry Butler
Absolutely.
With One Night Affair, also from 1972.
Originally, this is a covered song.
Really?
The OJs had it in 1969. When you hear the OJs version, totally Motown. You can even see them doing the
The steps. For those who aren't watching in the studio, he's doing the steps on a chair.
I love doing a visual gag yes. in the studio because it works so well.
Yeah,
for our
we
listeners.
Totally should webcam.
Now, this next track, look, I think it's well and truly a disco song, hands down. Corporation, Rock the Boat. So I'd like to know where you got the notion. Earlier disco tracks, much slower.
Yeah, I was just about to say, and that's actually, it did kind of continue on through. Disco shouldn't be confused with Doof Doof, which
absolutely
it kind of came much later. But yeah, look, that one's from 1974, so we're getting a little bit later now, which is, there were a few songs in 1974 that
it's actually from 1973,
mantle.
Because my partner and I had an argument about this afternoon. He said, no, it's 1974. They originally, Hughes Corporation popped it on their album of 1973 called Freedom for the Stallion. Of course it is.
Then if you read my books, there's a lot of this sexual stallion thing going on. Yes.
Remember Ride the White Horse? Ride the White Pony?
Yes.
Love that song. But then they released it in 74 as a single.
Ah, okay.
So, yeah. Now, my final one tonight, and I'm actually going to play the whole track. This is one of my favourite. Now, this is argued commercially for the sound of disco and for its success because it is an instrumental track. It's the Fabulous Love theme by Barry White's Love Unlimited Orchestra. 1973, but really a hit in early 1974.
Can I tell you an interesting fact about this song you may not know?
Please.
This song was not going to be released. Two DJs found it in like a reject bin at the record company, played it in the clubs,
And they loved it.
It made it to the top 20 without even being played on radio, and then radio picked it up.
That was the same thing when Chic did Everybody Dance. They just were mucking around, and they gave it to a friend, and it was a black club in New York, and they gave it to a friend, and they put it on. Everyone stopped in the club and ran to the dance floor. And when the song finished, the DJ played another song and they were like, no, can you play that track again?
Wow.
That's how much. Because Chic has such, and we're not actually playing Chic tonight, Chic has such a distinct flavour to their music and beat. But this is the original. Oh, I love this track. It is so many things of the 70s comes out in Love's theme. You listen to The Disco Affair on Joy 94.9.
Joy 94.9.
You're listening to A Very Disco Affair on Joy 94.9 tonight. It's Brett, and we've been playing the fabulous track of Love's Theme by Barry White and Love Unlimited Orchestra. For me, look, we were talking about the origins of disco, and I'd say, look, that song and Jerry Butler's One Night Affair for me, I would say, are probably that true disco sound.
Yeah, I think by the time you get to Barry White with Love's Theme, you've hit it.
Absolutely.
There's no question by then that it's established. But look, the disco in inverted commas. Look, it did come out of, funk and from that Motown sound and
absolutely.
That kind of thing.
But also the experimentation of, the electronic beat. That Motown was literally just getting into, with Reflections and
Thing was, a lot of the disco albums, they took a lot more production. The vocal was often used as just like another instrument, whereas it wasn't back in the Motown days and with a lot of kind of rock music, it wasn't bringing in four musicians to play.
Absolutely.
It was, a huge production, strings, guitar, drums, drum machines, waka waka, you can't have
that.
That's
a very technical
waka, waka.
Word out there. Yeah, absolutely. Yeah.
No, that's actually, and the bongos too, hitting the bongos in the background really quietly.
I found it interesting that disco comes from discothèque, which is actually a French word.
Oh, yeah.
Absolutely. And it refers to the clubs or the club scene of probably Saint-Tropez and the South along the French Riviera.
Yeah. In French, discotheque actually means library of music.
Yeah.
Yeah. Like bibliothèque.
Like bibliothèque.
Yeah. Oui.
That schoolgirl French definitely got you far, Mr. Sweetie.
It did. Yeah. Up to year 10, I did French. I did indeed.
So what I found, what I've always found really interesting in disco, a little bit like, and I know this is a bit of a stretch to compare it to rap music, but when rap music came out, it was the music of the street and of the ghetto and of the minority. Then, obviously, years later, Eminem came out and, you know, when white boys are starting doing rap, is it really rap
anymore?
Yeah,
and the same thing happened with disco because a lot of it started in, like, members-only clubs.
Yes.
It was all very... under the radar.
Absolutely.
Almost. And even once songs started charting, they still, Mr. and Mrs. Public, as I like to call them, weren't going disco dancing.
No.
It was, you know, it was three years or so before, you know, the big clubs opened. And but it was still very members only, very, and quite segregated too. There was a lot of black discos, a lot of gay discos.
Yes.
The gay discos, you know, were... I mean, that all led to the whole body beautiful thing. That's discos for the gays.
Yes.
Because one of the discos actually had a policy of not having air conditioning or opening the windows. And because disco was one of those first dances where everyone danced up close...
Of course.
The natural response was everyone has to take their
shirts off.
And it's been attributed that the whole... body beautiful thing that took over the gay world in the late 70s comes from disco.
Because everyone was taking off their clothes because the damn clubs were so hot.
Hence why pumped up pecs are known as disco tits.
Ah, well, I'm glad that's ticked a box there.
There you
Brady.
Go, that's
Thank
filled
you for
in
that.
A little bit of gay knowledge for you.
It's quite bizarre because I liked some of the underground. I mean, for me, disco is underground and I loved it around in the late 90s where it had a bit of a revival. For certain clubs, it never got quite to the mainstream nature as it did in the 70s and the early 80s. But I love the underground feel of disco.
The thing is, if you look into disco a little bit deeper than the songs that you'll get on, now that's what I call Disco 100 Great Hits of the 70s, Get Your Party Started.
Or a compilation disc of the 90s maybe as well.
Yeah, yes, you know, if you're that way inclined. Hit Machine Volume 8 for those who are paying attention.
Yes, but a rockin' album.
If you look a bit deeper, and I've mentioned this series of albums on the show before, which I shouldn't plug, but they're called Disco Discharge, and there's this series of double albums, and there's 16 of them in total.
Yes.
And of those, so there's 16 albums, there's probably 8-10 tracks on each one, so that's 32 discs, that's 300 songs roughly.
Yes.
I bet your average punter would know maybe 20 of them. So that's 300 songs that fall under the genre of disco or... high energy or one of the sub-genres of disco, like space disco or, you know, one of those. And if you seek those out, they don't have any of that daggy kind of attachment that, you know, a lot of people still attach to disco. You know, it's retro, or let's have a daggy disco night where we all wear afro wigs and wear flares.
Yeah.
And if you listen to those...
That's only one... This is, I find, quite hilarious when people refer to a decade... And like we've talked about the 60s before, there were so many facets in that decade. And the 70s was exactly the same. When you came to the later 70s of Studio 54, especially then, it wasn't about afros and bright colours. It was actually fabulously dressed people of the night. But Steve Rubell would bring all these different characters into his club like he was having a party. He was all about getting the mix right like a well-tossed salad.
Well, yes, or tosser as the
for the people who couldn't get in.
For the people who couldn't get in, because it was very, discriminatory.
Absolutely.
Clubs today are still the same, but that door policy, you know, there were a lot of people who didn't get in, and for them, that period was not as much fun as it's always made out to be in Studio 54.
Absolutely. And there's something wonderful about disco as well. As you mentioned before, it's not just about the one particular sound. It is such variety. I mean, the earlier stuff that we played, it is really funk. I mean, you hear the last stages of funk. And then the later stuff, like the Ritchie Family, like the early 80s, then you're starting to move away from disco altogether and it's moving to what is now known as dance music.
Yeah, or dance pop or something like that. So it was when you were crossing over from that disco to the pop thing that you got songs like Never Can Say Goodbye by Gloria Gaynor.
Fabulous.
Which was produced, useless fact, by the same guy who produced the song we're going to play now, but he's not credited on this one because of secret contractual things.
Yes.
So he did it. But anyway, so look, this is another song that grew out of the clubs. It's Carol Douglas with Doctor's Orders. Sold 100,000 copies in the first week that it was released to DJs.
Ooh. Hi, honey, it's me. I went to see the doctor today. 'Cause ever since you've been gone, I had a pain deep down inside. He says there's nothing really wrong with me. I'm just missing my man. So, honey, please, come on home as soon as you can. Doctor's orders
say... Hi, I'm Chaka Khan, and you're listening to Joy, Australia's first gay and lesbian radio station.
Chaka Khan was known to have a disco song or two, and you are listening to The Disco Affair tonight with Brett and the other Brett.
Absolutely. I'm Every Woman.
Yeah.
That was a great track of Chaka's.
Yeah.
Oh, loved it. Obviously about disco, mm-hmm. and I know I've played a couple of the tracks that actually came from disco movies. Now, I'm not talking about Studio 54 and the Last Days of Disco.
It's 54.
54.
I've picked you up on that so many times. I've got a real thing about that movie.
Clearly. But I actually wanted to talk about probably a couple of the big films of the decade, of the 70s. And the first one we can't go past is Saturday Night Fever.
Yeah. Now, this is when disco really kind of went mainstream.
And absolutely.
Those married public people that I keep talking about started going to learn to do the hustle classes. And, and it's also where the backlash against disco kind of started fairly soon after Saturday Night Fever. But before we get onto that, Saturday Night Fever.
Yes.
As much as it is kind of renowned for the white suit and the pointy dancing, critics and a lot of fans stand by that movie. It's actually not cheesy. It's actually a really good movie.
Look, parts of it are dated. And that's, however, it's a really gritty film about this guy in Brooklyn who has a dead-end job but becomes really the king of the dance floor at the local club.
There's two versions of it. One is 6 minutes longer than the other one.
Oh, really?
Yeah, one's PG and one's R.
That's not the scene in the car?
Yeah.
Which was, can I say, I was actually shocked when that actually occurred.
It's because if you kind of look at it, you see the cover and, as I said, everyone kind of pictures everyone dressing up in the white suit for fancy dress parties and things. And so you kind of go into it expecting to see this cheesy movie about this guy in a white suit dancing around on a flashing dance floor. But it's got like all this social commentary and stuff in it. And
Absolutely.
There's a couple of really kind of rough scenes. Anyone who's seen it.
Yeah, well, there's rape and then there's this terrible suicide.
Yeah.
As well as this whole battle between a young man trying to sort of sort out his life and trying to make the
next And then you've got
step.
The whole brother leaving the priesthood and, gang violence and all this kind of...
But great film. If you haven't seen it, see it. Something to talk about with the soundtrack. The Bee Gees, it was one of the best-selling soundtracks of all time. And the Bee Gees, it's quite interesting because this took the Bee Gees. The Bee Gees were getting slow momentum ever since they left Australia and went back to England. But after this album, they were branded as a disco band. And this was the only album that they did which was really disco.
Yeah. And I think it's because they're so identified with that film, the strutting down the street.
Absolutely.
But that soundtrack has, if you listen to the soundtrack is
fantastic.
Awesome. It's got so many great songs on it.
Absolutely.
Which a lot of the time you kind of forget were even in the film.
Hey, another film, The Wiz. Now, this was from 1978. Now, I have to be honest with you, other than probably Saturday Night Fever, most disco films were clearly made to cash in on the disco dollar. The Wiz, for those of you, it was obviously based on The Wizard of Oz, and it was actually from an adaptation of the 1975 Broadway musical. Now, the problem is, in the 70s, Brett, after the great, big, grand musicals of the 60s, the musicals were really dead until the 80s. The 70s, after Hair, people didn't like going to the musical anymore.
I was
going to
say Hair
is
probably... Jesus Christ Superstar was kind of early 70s.
But Jesus Christ Superstar was like a rock.
Yeah.
It was a rock concert rather than a traditional musical. And The Wiz... Look, The Wiz is actually... If you listen to the soundtrack, The Wiz is awesome. I mean, the film had Diana Ross, Michael Jackson. It also had Lena Horne, Thelma Carpenter, and some great like soul singers. Like,
I have
beautiful
not seen
singers.
It for years and years and years.
Look, I think the soundtrack's probably better than the whole film in itself. But, I mean, it was an all-black cast, and that was very... They purposely chosen this. And Motown Productions actually had backed this film, as well as they also backed another film, Thank God It's Friday, which was obviously Queen of Disco. And, I mean, I can't get past disco without mentioning Donna Bloody Summer.
Yes.
But this, Thank God It's Friday, and for those of you who don't know Thank God It's Friday, it's based in a Los Angeles, a fictional Los Angeles disco club called The Zoo. Deborah Winger and Jeff Goldblum, it was their first big film.
There you go.
Well, I don't know how big it was, but Donna Summer actually appears in it, and she actually performs Last Dance.
And she's playing an aspiring disco singer. Huge stretch there.
Huge stretch. Another huge stretch was another film, You Can't Stop the Music.
Look, I have got an absolute soft spot for this film. I know everybody mocks it. It used to be on TV every New Year's Day. I don't know if it still is. But, of course, I own the deluxe DVD edition of it. It is brilliant. And I actually, my mum took me and another family.
Yes.
We went to see this at the Bendigo Golden Twins Cinema as, like, the highlight of our school holidays. Because, like most of America and Australia... No one knew that the village people were gay. That whole thing completely went over their heads.
But this is what I've found so funny, and it just dawned upon me. I remember in the 90s, we were talking about this over dinner with a bunch of friends, and it was just, how could... There was a leather man, there was the construction worker, a cop. Like, they all had uniforms.
But the thing was, they did that whole macho thing, and everyone just thought they were playing macho men.
It was so camp. When you look at it now, it's so incredibly camp.
With the benefit of hindsight.
Of course.
But, you know, Mr. and Mrs. Joe Public, who I've been mentioning a lot tonight, they didn't get it.
They're not your closest friends, are they?
Look, you know, I grew up with them, so, you know.
They didn't get it. It was really funny. You Can't Stop the Music was an absolute flop because of the Disco Sucks campaign that came out. However, in Australia, it was a hit.
Yep.
And in Australia, at the same year, Xanadu, which was a flop commercially, in Australia it was a hit. But with Xanadu, the album wasn't a flop. That actually made money.
That is a brilliant album.
Absolutely. And I'm going to play a little bit of it now. It has to be ONJ.
Oh, of course.
With Xanadu, you're on Joy 94.9 with Brett and Brett on The Affair.
Radio, online, all the time. joy.org.au.
You've been listening to A Very Disco Affair with Brett and Brett on Joy 94.9.
Brett, I'm going home to watch Xanadu.
I know, well.
Or Can't Stop the Music.
Fantastic. Hey, look, I just want to say thank you so much for the lovely disco trail that we blazed tonight.
Woohoo!
It was fantastic. I want to say a big shout out. I hope the protest in London, to all those fabulous protesters, I hope it all goes well. There's going to be over 3,000 people attending.
It's going to be huge. We are international, and next week we're having an international affair. We're having a New Zealand affair.
Oh, fantastic.
I will be working on my offensive New Zealand accent impersonations between now and then.
Oh, well, glad. I'm glad of that. Hey, we might even hear from our missing co-host as well.
You never know. You never know. Now, we were just talking about some disco movies just before.
Yes, we were talking about disco movies, and we were talking about Thank God It's Friday. Brett, how can I go past... I mean, I was going to play Bad Girls again, but I've played Bad Girls. I think I've broken the record here in the studio. Yeah. It has to be The Last Dance with Donna Summer.
This won an Oscar.
I know.
And a Golden Globe.
So she should. She's fantastic. Rest in peace, Miss Summer. Brady, final thoughts?
It's The Last Dance.
It's The Last Dance.
Your last chance.
We'll see you next week. Good night, Australia.
You're on Joy 94.9. another podcast of The Affair on Joy 94.9.
Thanks for listening to another Joy podcast brought to you by Australia's LGBTQIA+ community media organisation, Joy. Help us keep Joy on air. Head to joy.org.au. Joy, a diverse sound for a diverse community.